Hello everyone, welcome to the Laura Horn Art Podcast. Today we are talking about the pros and cons of sharing your creative process with others. And this is certainly something that I am seeing more and more on Instagram and on other platforms. So I thought it would be good to dive into some of the perks and benefits of sharing your creative process, but also some things to be aware of and some of the pitfalls. But before we do that, I thought we might start off with our studio news this week, because last week we had the best of intentions of having a bit of a studio news catch up in our podcast episodes, and we didn't actually get to it. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about what's been going on and then dive into our topic of today.
Hello, Laura. How are you going?
I'm really good. I'm really enjoying getting back into the podcast, and I feel like I've almost surprised myself, and I won't harp on about it too much, but I didn't expect to be enjoying it as much as I am. And I'm really, really embracing this relaxed approach to the podcast. And I wanted to circle back actually to last week's episode, because the beginning of that episode, I talked about how we had a family member or a couple of family members coming to stay, and that it threw my plans because you told me the morning that it was happening. And I just wanted to say that that ended up being such a brilliant week. Like, it was just so lovely, and it reinforced that point to me to embrace a little bit more spontaneity and flexibility and just a relaxed mindset in all aspects of my life.
I had the most amazing week as well, because for people who are listening, the person that came over is my cousin Noel, and we grew up together. We traveled the world together. We were in the military together. We spent a lot of time together. And then obviously over the years, as we both had families, we kind of drifted apart. And then coming to Australia, I never really got to see him that much. And he's not a communicator. He's not on social media. You can't even get him on the phone. So having him in my house here in Australia was amazing. And he has a son, Joshua. And I haven't seen Joshua in over 15 years. And he's 19 now, and he's on a gap year. It was just an amazing few days to have them here in South Australia with us and meeting Joshua and getting to know him. And Joshua has another 6 months left to do in Australia, but he's going to finish those 6 months with us. He's going to come down and stay with us for 4 or 5 days. He wants to go fishing. He wants to see more of South Australia. And that was wonderful. And the day Noel left, that was the day we left for my birthday weekend. You and I went away to a retreat. It's called a retreat, but it's kind of like it's a winery that has 6 bedrooms in it. And it reminded me of being in the south of Italy. It was like unbelievably beautiful. Swimming pool, beautiful bedrooms. And it was in wine country here in South Australia, a place called the Barossa Valley. And we had amazing weather. The sunsets were unbelievable. Cocktails, beautiful food, totally relaxed. It was just you and me. And I honestly can't remember a time in my life that I've been more content, happy, relaxed. And I just had the most amazing week.
Yeah, I really feel like our conversation almost set the tone. We didn't realize it at the time when we were chatting last week on the podcast, but then we just had this beautiful week afterwards, and it really reinforced for me the importance of family and relationships. Even when you are building a business and you have a lot on your plate and you're juggling many things, and this has been my challenge over the past few years, and I have missed out on things because I have prioritized growing our art business, but it can't continue that way. There always comes a point where you do need to realign, reevaluate, you know, let some things just be. You don't have to do everything. And this is just such a big learning for me. And I'll continue to keep sharing about this on the podcast as I keep on this path of relaxing and enjoying the moment and being in the now.
Yeah, being a relaxed woman.
Yeah, so it's continuing the theme. Last week I talked about being a relaxed woman, and I just want to keep on that. So I want you to keep reminding me of that, because I do have these times where I lose sight and I can go very deep into things, and it just never feels healthy at the time. I know what I'm doing and I know that I should stop, but I sometimes just use work as a, I don't know what I'm using it for, whether I'm just trying to numb out in some kind of way or cope with things, but sometimes I work excessively. And this past week has just showed me how beautiful a more balanced life can be.
Yeah, I love the saying, you're not responsible for your first thought, but you're definitely responsible for your second thought and your actions. And when I got the text from Noel, he'd sent it late at night. This is just the kind of guy he is. He sent me a text while I was asleep. So I woke up in the morning, I opened my phone, and there's a text message there from Noel saying, "We're landing tonight at 7 o'clock. And I just turned to you and I said, look at this text. And my first thought was, oh my God, what am I going to do? How am I going to do it? Will I cancel him? Will I tell him not to come? Panic stations. And then I relaxed and calmed down and told myself, everything's going to be fine. Just enjoy it. But it's the same as what we were talking about last week, how I say that, you know, when I wake up in the mornings, I wake up depressed. And the same when I get a message that doesn't suit how I'm thinking or what I have planned, it's panic stations initially. How can I fix it to suit me and all that kind of stuff? And it wasn't until you said, we don't have to film tomorrow. Relax, calm down, everything will be fine. And it ended up being great.
Yeah, I really love that concept that you're not responsible for your first thought. It's the second and third and the actions afterwards that matter, because my first thoughts are often not very good.
Well, they're normally selfish, aren't they?
But we talked a bit about this last week as well, like improving your recovery time. So when you do get rattled and you go into a state of panic, improving the amount of time it takes for you to flip your mindset. And that's what happened last week. And we were able to flip it quite quickly. And as a result of that, we ended up having this wonderful time with visitors. We moved our filming to another day. We cleared our week and enjoyed it. So I love that concept of, it's not the first thought. Don't worry about that. It's natural to have a response or panic, especially if you are, you know, if you have plans or you're a more perfectionistic type of person. But then it's how do you then process that? How do you run it through a filter and reason? And then I guess it's a more educated decision in the end, and one that will lead to more happiness.
It's why meditation works. When you meditate, your first thought becomes a distant memory, because you have thoughts running through your head constantly and you're sitting there really thinking on things. You have the time to process and look at answers, the correct answers, and also the correct actions. You know, you can be more empathetic, compassionate, whereas if you don't stop and take that time to like settle in, have a look at the landscape, what's happening, how can I make this work? If you're just running full steam ahead and you're not letting your mind slow down, you can cause havoc.
It is about slowing down, and meditation is so good for that, because I would imagine that with meditation, and I don't do it a lot myself, but I have done it from time to time, but it really is about allowing those first thoughts to pass on through quickly, because they're not usually your best thoughts, are they? They're the ones where, oh, I need to do this, or you get down on yourself. Oh, I'm so lazy. I'm so stupid. Why haven't I done this yet? That sort of stuff. And even the mundane things. What am I cooking for dinner? oh, I haven't gone grocery shopping, like that sort of stuff is running through your head. And in meditation, you learn to just let those thoughts pass by so that you can get to this deeper stuff and this better way of navigating the ups and downs of life. Once we had that weekend though, it's straight back into work, figuring out how to maintain relaxation and spontaneity while still having structure. So today's Tuesday and we're recording our podcast, and this is now our designated podcasting day. And 80% of the time I reckon we'll end up recording on a Tuesday, but there will always be times when we need to shuffle things around. And in fact, we actually did just have to turn off the podcasting for a little bit because we had street line workers coming through and painting the lines on the street. So we're going to get back into the conversation now and chat more about what's been going on.
So what has been going on?
My mind has been taken up a bit with being away, but I have been juggling a few other things. And I got back into the studio yesterday and went into my drawers, had a bit of a rustle around and pulled out a whole lot of paintings, watercolor paintings that I'd started and not finished. And I shared this on a little story on Instagram. And in the caption, I talked about the fact that sometimes I have paintings that I won't put the second or third layers on for several months. Like I might start a painting and then it will just sit in the drawer for a few months. And sometimes it's years. So some of the paintings I pulled out, I started in my old studio. In fact, one in particular was from the studio that we had in the garage. So that's got to be a good 5-6 years old. And I was looking at these pieces and suddenly I feel like working on them again. So it's interesting how time can change your perspective. So at the time I probably started it and then maybe got caught up in another idea, put it away. Now I've pulled it out and I'm like, oh, I actually really quite like that. And I can see the next move. And so what I've been thinking about is creating a YouTube video and sharing what those next moves are. So grabbing a bunch of paintings, older pieces that have backgrounds down, and then just working on them in various ways. So it'll be very mixed media. So some of the pieces I'll add mark making with pens, pastels. Some of them I might add some stitching or some textural elements into them. So at the moment they are all laid out on a big table just waiting for me. I'm actually really excited about diving into those. So finding my way back into watercolour, which doesn't surprise me. It's a 42 degree day today here in Adelaide, or at least that's the forecast. And as soon as it starts to get that hot, I just find that I'm not wanting to paint big acrylic paintings. The paint dries so fast, it's hot, and just sitting at my table in an air-conditioned room working on watercolours feels a whole lot more appealing. Interestingly, someone asked me whether or not I have a preference. Do I like watercolour more than acrylic, or acrylic more than watercolour? I've grappled with this a lot over the years. I just don't know. It really depends on what's going on in my life, how much time I have available for art. I don't really have a favourite, and sometimes I feel like I would improve my work if I just chose one main medium, but I just can't. Don't have a better answer than that, because I'll work on acrylic paintings for a while, as I have been, really enjoy it, get very passionate about working in that way on bigger canvases, and then just one day my watercolours will just wink at me. I'll just look at them and suddenly I'm back and all I want to do is paint watercolours. So I don't have a preference. I call myself a mixed media artist for that reason, because I get the most joy from mixing materials up and having that ebb and flow in my creative practice and being able to transition into a different medium depending on my life circumstances. And I do feel that that has been one of the reasons why I've been able to consistently make art for the last decade or so, is because I've changed my approach based on all the different things that have happened when we've moved studios, when my space has been limited, I have moved into something else. And I've never felt like there isn't something that I can do to scratch that itch. And sometimes it's small, it's drawing, sometimes it's big canvases, but there's always something. And so for that reason, I don't think I'll ever choose. I might go more in one direction. So I might, it might be 70% watercolor, 30% acrylic, but I don't think I would ever fully let go of a particular medium that I still find enjoyment out of. I always combine my main medium with mixed media elements. So whether I'm working with watercolor or acrylic, I will always combine that with pens, pencils, charcoal, collage. So I'll always be a mixed media artist, but I could choose one main paint. That is something that I have thought about many, 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 many times, whether or not I should just focus on watercolor or focus on acrylic. I know that I probably would benefit in some ways from doing that, but for me, I just have to follow what's enjoyable. So I can't see that decision coming anytime soon.
Okay, well, speaking of decisions, this week's podcast is all about a decision, and it's the decision whether to share your work or share your process online.
Yeah, I thought this would be a good topic to dive into because I am seeing an increasing number of artists taking that step to share their work online and specifically to share their process. And what I am seeing is that that type of content, so if you are talking about things like reels in particular or YouTube videos, can do really well. A lot of people do want to be able to access techniques and process. And of course, if it's in a reel or on YouTube, it's free. So you are providing people with a free way for them to learn how to make art. So it's very appealing. And because of that, you are going to see quite a lot of likes, shares, comments, and it can be very appealing because you want to get that feedback. But there's a lot to consider when sharing your process. How much are you going to share for free? How are you going to share it? Are you going to share your process in other ways in a paid format? So that could be an online class, a subscription, a workshop. And then if you are doing both, where do you draw the line? And that's something that we are always thinking about because in our online art business, we provide courses that are paid courses, but we also share tips over on Reels. We also have a YouTube channel. So we have plenty of process out there for people to enjoy. So let's talk about the pros first to sharing your art process. Now, when I first started sharing my process, I did not have online classes. I was sharing my process in order to firstly share a little bit of the joy and magic that I was experiencing as an artist. I was very new to art and I was excited. There was a genuine excitement about sharing what I was up to and knowing that it would have an impact and maybe would encourage someone else to try art.
You are also new to Instagram. Your art journey and your Instagram journey almost started at the same time.
Yeah, I started Instagram to share my art and that started with photographs and then progressed quite early on into sharing time lapses of my art process. Like I just said before, it did get feedback. So people would comment and I knew that sharing a video would generally get more engagement and would put more eyes on my art. And at that time, I was selling my artwork in cafes, art markets and places like that. And it had a direct effect on my art sales. There were paintings that I would share the time lapse of and then say in the caption, this painting will be available in the cafe where I was selling my art. And I would have people messaging me straight away wanting to meet me at the cafe and take a look at that painting. So it was working on that level of just getting the word out. And as I got deeper into it, I realized that more and more people were asking about the making side of it. So what suppliers are you using? What paper are you using? Do you stretch your watercolor paper? What's your favorite Daniel Smith watercolor set or something like that? So I started to realize that there was a lot of interest in how to make art, and that's where the seed was planted for making art classes. And it's important to know that there are those two sides of sharing your process. You can share your process in a way where you are highlighting your art for art sales, or you can share your process in a way where you are really digging into the specifics of how you make your art. And most people who enjoy that type of content are really looking at replicating your art. They want to learn how to make art. So it goes without saying that this is a big business. This is an industry. One of the pros is that you can earn a living from sharing your art process. Even if it's free on YouTube, you can earn an income through AdSense and promoting products and things on YouTube. You can have a Patreon account. You could have separate classes on a platform like Kajabi or Teachable or something like that. So a big advantage of sharing your process is tapping into a different income stream and also getting more eyes on your art. So the types of content that you are creating will often appeal to people on both levels. They won't necessarily be in one camp. You may find that some of your potential students are also the people that will end up buying your art. So it can have that double effect.
But don't people just share things because they're proud to share them also? Like, it doesn't have to have any rhyme or reason other than the fact that someone's proud of the progress they made with their painting, so they show it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how my Instagram started. It did start from that place of just sharing what I was up to, being proud, learning new skills, even just getting excited about filming a time lapse for myself, figuring out how to do it, and opening up conversations, because most artists love talking about their process and having conversations, whether they are in the comment thread or on DMs. I love it over on YouTube. YouTube is a great platform for discussion, and I learn new things. People suggest suppliers to me, ways of working, books. And so there is that aspect of it, and that's a really beautiful place to start, because while you may end up getting into things like Patreon, paid classes, what you need in order for that to be successful is community, is friendships and engagement and discussion and conversation. And if you start by sharing your process with that in mind, the other things will flow. Whereas I feel like when you decide that you are going to share your process and your primary goal is to make arts sales or to sell online classes, sometimes we jump ahead of the process that needs to happen. And in fact, I do have a podcast episode that I wouldn't mind mentioning, which is one that we recorded a while back, which was about the stages of making income from your art. And it goes into how important the community building phase is. So definitely, there's always something that comes through when you are sharing in a very organic kind of way. It just comes through. And that's one of the reasons why I don't pre-schedule all my social media posts ahead of time. I don't plan everything out, because what I find is that the most successful, in many ways, posts that I share are the ones that I do in the moment, because I have this thought. I think, oh, this is really interesting, or this is fascinating to me at this time. I might share that. And I'll just be moving around, walking through the house, and it will come to me. I might be cooking dinner and I'll write out a post and share a video or something like that. And often they are the ones that do the best. So even though we can do all these things to plan ahead, there is always going to be a benefit in just sharing because you want to share. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to share as well. Like, there's nothing wrong with wanting to show people a little bit of your process and how you do things. Sometimes I think people feel like you're almost like showing off or something like that. But I always think, and I always come back to this thought when I share anything online, if it has impacted one person in a positive way, if it has sparked them to make some art or go to a gallery or, you know, maybe just open up some kind of interesting conversation with someone that they love in their life about creativity, it's worthwhile. And I often look at my posts, and I've really learned how to measure things differently in my head. I used to be very driven by how many likes there were, how many shares or whatever. And I would think, oh, okay, that was a really great piece of content. But now I look more at the quality of the engagement in a way. So, you know, getting a whole lot of just love hearts, it's so fast. But sometimes I will share something and it won't be appealing to a really wide audience, but it will be interesting for the people that are engaged in the way that I work or my classes and things like that. It will be more interesting to them. It might be a little bit more personal. And then when I look in the comments are so much more detailed and they've got depth to them. And I wouldn't compare that in the same way in the past. I would think, oh, well, that's not that great because I only got a small amount of likes on that post. Whereas this reel I shared the other day, I got thousands and thousands. But something has switched in my mind and I'm starting to see things differently. And I can have something that gets 6,000 likes and something that gets 300 likes. And in my mind, they can both be just as successful.
A couple of years ago, I would roll my eyes at a comment like that. I always thought in order to make an impact, you had to be helping hundreds of people. I was very fortunate at the end of last year to do a couple of speaking engagements to younger men. And that's when it like really hit me. If one person here can take something out of this, then I've made a difference. It's just so easy in today's world to think that, like in the conversation we had last week about perfectionism and everything having to be an A plus. I'm just reminded now that making a difference to one person is the goal. Everything else after that is a bonus.
It's really big making a difference in one person's life. That's what I've realized. Like, you could make a very small difference in many people's lives, but then you could actually make a huge life-changing difference in one person's life. So you just can't measure. You can't measure. But it's helpful to me when I am putting stuff out there, because putting stuff out there is hard. It can be vulnerable to put something out there, and you're always worried that you might put a video out and nobody comments or it just tanks. And it happens to all of us. It happens to me. There's a massive diversity in how my content is received, and I'm learning all the time. I'm quite new to YouTube. I have YouTube videos that do really well. I have had YouTube videos that just don't hit the mark. YouTube keeps sending me messages on how I can do better. So I'm learning. But in that process, for me, it's just helpful to just keep reminding myself, if there's just one person, it was worthwhile. If there's just a handful of comments and likes, and when you are starting out, this is so important, because one eventually leads to three, it leads to 10. Things grow when you put more effort and energy into them naturally. So it's just keeping yourself positive and realizing that not everything is going to hit in the same way, and that doesn't matter, because we create all sorts of different kinds of content. Sometimes we create content and we know that, okay, this is the type of video or post it's going to make an impact. Like when you've been making stuff for a while, you tend to know the ones that might, you know, they appeal to a broader audience. But then you might make something and it's a smaller audience, but it's really powerful for that. And they tend to be your main core audience, your tribe. And it's important to cater to everyone, because some pieces of content, I hate the word content, but here I am saying content constantly, but that's what I'm talking about. Some videos, reels are going to appeal to a lot of new people. You're going to get all sorts of new people in, and that's great. That's great for growing your audience. And then other types of videos that you share will be for your core community, and they will love it. And someone who maybe doesn't know you won't really get it as much, because they don't have the backstory. It just may not hit them straight away. But for those people that know you, that's what keeps them coming back. That's what they live for in many ways. Like they love those more intimate, less trendy things. And so having both is really important.
I follow a lot of photographers and filmmakers on YouTube. They're all stepping away from YouTube. And one of them explained his reasoning behind it. And he's been a YouTuber for 14 years now. In his latest video, it only came out 4 days ago, he was talking about if his videos did well, he was doing well. If his videos didn't do well, he wasn't doing well. He became a YouTuber. And what he was saying was, he's not a YouTuber. He's a filmmaker. He's a photographer. He's a maker. YouTube just happened by accident. And then he became so connected to YouTube. Sharing his process became such a part of his personality that if it didn't do well, he perceived that as not being worthy. And if it did really well, then he felt loved. It just goes to show that this process of sharing, it can have a really negative impact on you as a person, on your psyche, and that kind of thing. But also, just to push on with that, an athlete who I coach, he's traveling to Dubai in February, and we had a media team come to film him for 2 days a week and a half ago. The filmmaker and the director were saying, okay, can you do this? Can you do that? And I was like, no, we don't want to show this. I don't want his opponent to see any of this. So we were very reserved in what we were sharing. And one of the other coaches just turned around and he made a joke and he said, why aren't you showing it? Because they can just go online and see the stuff he shared before. It's all out there. There's still that side of me that was like, don't show this.
Well, you've touched on some of the cons, which is what we wanted to get to in this conversation, is that, yeah, there are many pros to sharing your process, but there's also a downside. And one of them you mentioned was getting really caught up in the numbers, because when you start sharing your process, people are responding to that. They're asking a lot of questions, they're commenting, they're liking, and you might find that that blows up. It can become your main thing, and that may not have been your intention for it to be your main thing. And then you start chasing those likes, comments, and you might find that you stop sharing other things because they don't do so well. So you may have been sharing more in relation to your finished art pieces or things like that, but you start only sharing process reels because they do really well, or process videos on YouTube. So you become almost like a one-trick pony because that's been doing so well. You then continue to chase that, and eventually you get burnt out, but you also become creatively just flat because you're doing the same thing all the time. And that's one of the reasons why I choose to have a very diverse range of things that I share, because I don't just share what does well, because I'd get bored. I don't want to share a step-by-step reel of how I do a painting 3 times a week. I want to share bits about my mindset, clips from the podcast. They may not do so well, but I want to be creatively nourished and challenged. And for me, that involves sharing a wider variety of things that, and not everything is going to hit the same note, but they'll be different notes. And together, they make music for me. And that's what I'm after. I want my creative life to be varied and interesting and to make my own kind of music and not have to be dictated by an algorithm or popularity. And that's a personal choice for me. So another aspect that you talked about was not wanting to share your secrets. And this is something to think about, because once you start sharing your art process, other people will be copying you. That's the way of the world. And something that you need to be aware of is that you will start seeing art out there that looks a lot like yours. And you'll also have people teaching your process and presenting it as their own. And there are different degrees to which this happens. It happens on a spectrum.
Sometimes I can see it. And if I can see it, it's too close.
Yeah. And you need to, as an artist and as a teacher, you really do need to think this through and decide on how you are going to approach it. Because you will see people copy your work to the letter and present it as your own. Maybe take your classes and present a start to finish project as their own. And then you'll also see people who are learning, who are taking bits and pieces, combining it with their own ideas or maybe ideas that they've gathered from elsewhere. It will still hit you. You'll still see it as a kind of Laura-esque painting, for example. And these are the tricky ones, because it's a very grey area. And I have over the years learned that most people move through this. It's a part of the process, because most of us, we want to make something that feels authentic and our own. And it's hard, and we have to get there through trying out a variety of different things. So I've made a lot of peace with that middle zone over the years. And I only really try and educate people. Well, I try and educate everyone where they're at. And I have lovely students that contact me and they check with me, they send me messages and say, do you think this is too close? And we have conversations about what they can do in order to push it in a different direction and put their own stamp on it. Sometimes I do need to educate people when they are taking something and really claiming it as their own and not giving any credit, not making enough changes to it. And I'm very particular about which ones I follow up on, because I also want to protect my own energy around this. I don't have all day, every day to be chasing up stuff in relation to ideas, process, art being stolen or copied. And unfortunately for artists, this is going on all over the place. And this isn't just around art process. This is also around finished art. I am getting messages quite often about my art in places where I have not approved it to be, or I have not sold it through the correct channels. I do have a licensing agent, so it is a bit tricky now, because some stuff is legitimate. It has been, the digital images have been sold to that company, but sometimes there are some that aren't. So it's a tricky process. But when you are sharing your way of doing things, whether that's in a reel or on YouTube or in a class, you need to think about the fact that people will be making art that's similar to yours, and you need to figure out what your stance on it is. And I don't think there's a right or a wrong here. I can see the points for both sides, because some people are very, very firm on this and they will talk to people in those grey areas. And I understand that, because we are protecting the work of artists. And then other people will be a little bit more, okay, every idea comes from somewhere. There's no such thing as a new idea. And it's really about how do people take an idea and combine it with other ideas and make it into something new. But be prepared. Be prepared to have those conversations. Or if you decide that it's not something you want to get into, then be prepared to see it and just let it go by and make peace with it. But it's just something that will happen if you are sharing your process online.
And if you have any kind of presence online, you will share one of your pieces, whether it's photography, filmmaking, art, even comedy, a joke, whatever. And someone will do the exact same thing as you, same photograph, same painting, and they will get more interaction on their post than you did on yours. And that can be absolutely infuriating.
Yes, this has happened to me quite a bit. I've had my ego bruised by seeing certain things that I know have come from my classes and then having that person do a better job. And whether that be the way they've presented it, packaged it up, and, you know, they may have changed a few things. So I look at it and go, okay, they've brought some new stuff in and they've actually made it better. And that's been something that I've needed to make peace with over the last year or two is seeing people take ideas and then make them better and get more engagement and more likes and more comments. And this is part of the creative process.
And it comes back to making a life-changing difference in someone's life. The ego, yeah, it's like that thing, you know, I want you to do better, but not better than me.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the last year or two, I have started to see it from that perspective and actually go, well, this is awesome. This is a seed that has grown into something big and beautiful for that person. And it's changed their life. And I need to realize that that's the game I'm in. If I can focus on that, I can just get back into sharing and planting those seeds and letting them grow into things. And people do change things up. And so sometimes I'm just a little bit like, oh, I know where that started from. But when I really look at it, they're bringing another layer to it, and a layer that I didn't provide. So they're putting extra inspiration, extra details, extra energy and passion into something that I started, and maybe I then moved on to something else. If I look at it in that way, I'm planting all these seeds all over the art space, and then other people are taking that idea and then nourishing it, and it's growing, and then that's feeding into someone else's creative life. If I can take that approach, then I can be happy. That's what I wanted to express in this conversation, and also to say that there really isn't a right or wrong with this in a way. Obviously, there's some things that are icky and wrong, but it is a grey area. And I do think you need to find your own personal approach and mindset when you are teaching online. So we've talked about the negative of your process being copied, and it does take away a little bit of the mystery of your process as well. It can be detrimental if you are looking to get your work into galleries and things like that, and there are a lot of replicas of your paintings out there. So it is something to be mindful of. The other side of it, the other negative or con, something to consider, is just how much work goes into sharing your process, because all of these things take a lot of administrative time, whether it's creating a reel, a YouTube video, a paid class. You are going to find that the amount of time that you have for painting will decrease. I remember when I first started making art, I was painting every day. I was painting on weekends. I had heaps and heaps of time to make art. And when I moved into making online classes, the time diminished significantly. And now I'm always trying to carve out one or two days a week to paint in between recording, filming, answering questions, setting up sales pages, creating email campaigns for my classes. It will depend on what type of sharing you do as to how much work is involved. But once you start sharing reels of your process that quite often leads into these other things. And so be prepared that if you are going to go into the world of sharing your process, your art world will change and you won't have as much personal time for art, and you will be grappling with systems, processes, technical difficulties, queries. It can be quite challenging. But there are huge benefits to it as well, which we talked about at the beginning of the episode. And if you can build good systems, you're going to go a long way to alleviating some of the stress and eventually, as things grow, getting help in areas where you can, so that you can claim back that painting time.
So there'll be somebody listening to this podcast and they'll just be starting out on the art journey. And they'll want to share their stuff. What advice would you give somebody on sharing, how to share? How would you share your art?
Well, I think when it comes to sharing your process, which is what we're talking about today, rather than sharing your art itself, I would first of all think about why you want to share your art process. And I know at the beginning it can be hard to sort of think about it in this more deliberate way, but it is worthwhile thinking about, do you want to share it because you are excited and proud of your work, you just want to showcase what you are doing, or do you want to get people interested in how you make art with the idea that eventually you might transition into creating online classes or in-person workshops or having a Patreon, because making that distinction will impact what platforms you choose and how you go about things. And also thinking about how much time do you want to spend on this? How does creating videos or pieces of content around your art process fit into your creative week? How do you want to feel? How many days do you want to be making art versus how many days or hours do you want to be setting up a tripod and a camera and recording your process? Because there is friction there when you add in the videoing. It's not quite the same as going into wherever you make art, putting your music on and just wafting around, making art as you please, is different to setting up a camera, making sure you have the right angle, making sure that you clean the lens so it doesn't have smudges on it, pressing record at the right time, making your process filmable. So if you do something that goes for hours and hours and hours and you're just doing little dots, you don't really want 4 hours of a repetitive process. You want a little clip of it. So there's a lot that goes into filming, and you need to think about how that fits into your workflow. And if you think about that and say, okay, I want to spend a bit of time on this, but I don't want it to be the bulk of my time, then have a look at what are the easiest options. Probably starting with something like Reels is an easier option. How could I make Reels fun, quick? What would that process look like? And you might need to go out, you might need to get some education. Maybe there's a little course you can do on creating Reels, and you can figure out a simple way to share what you're up to. And when you are looking at that, think about, what is it that I'm trying to share? Am I sharing how I make it? Or am I just getting people really fascinated by what I do, because then they get to see the end painting and they might want to go and purchase that painting or find out more or go over to my website? Because the way that you set up your Reels might differ depending on the outcome that you are hoping for in relation to sharing your process. So I would be looking at some of those bigger questions. And then if you are thinking about getting into sharing your process so that you can offer classes and workshops, Reels would be a good way to start learning about sharing, but then you would want to look into how could you share in a more tutorial, longer format? And that's where something like YouTube could be a really good place to play around with the concept of teaching your process in a step-by-step way. YouTube is a great platform for testing out ideas and experimenting, and you can be quite relaxed about YouTube, because while people will watch the video and you might earn a little bit through YouTube, they're not specifically paying you yet. So you don't have quite the same stress as when you create a class that is a paid product. So it's a good learning place, YouTube, and many artists do start with sharing a little bit on YouTube and then progressing into sharing on a paid platform. I would just have a little bit of a think, because I think the temptation is to just throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks, and to not be aware of some of the underlying aspects of sharing your process. So, you know, are you happy for people to send you DMs and ask you specifically what brush you use to do this particular stroke and what colour? Is that something that you'll be okay with? Are you happy to spend a certain amount of your week creating content? So these are the thoughts, the things that I would ask. And this conversation was really about sharing some of the pros and cons, so that any person who's thinking about this can listen and make a decision that suits them and their creative life. So on that note, I think that's where I'll leave today's conversation. There is a lot that you can unpack with this topic, and we probably could have created several episodes about aspects of sharing your process, but I hope that this has been interesting for everyone. You can find out more about the podcast if you head on over to my website, laurahornart.com, or even head over to my resources page, because I do have a page on my website where I share various freebies. So you will actually see some of our free videos and things that we've experimented with. And you can find more about the podcast. There's also other PDFs, free classes and things like that over there at laurahornart.com/resources. And I just want to say thank you again for everyone who is listening in. It's a joy to be back. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do spread the word. You can just snap a photograph of the podcast episode on your phone, share it in a story. It's really helpful to us, and we really do appreciate everyone who listens in each week.